you. Good afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome to this UNCTAD press briefing on UNCTAD 16, the 16th United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, which takes place here in the Palais in Geneva between the 20th and the 24th of October, so in just a week. We are joined by the Secretary General of UNCTAD, Secretary General Rebecca Greenspan, who will brief you on the conference, the global context, and the issues that will be addressed: global trade, finance, investment, and technology for development. After her remarks, we will open the floor for your questions. So firstly, Secretary General, thank you very much, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all for being here today. I want to start putting you up to date on UNCTAD 16. We have only 1 week to go for UNCTAD 16, and I want to start by expressing my deepest gratitude to the government of Switzerland for hosting us and demonstrating its commitment to multilateralism. And I have to say that hosting the conference here in Geneva strengthens Geneva as a global center for trade policy and dialogue. Geneva is a strong ecosystem for international organizations, and we are happy to have our conference here after 61 years, because we started here in Geneva, is where UNCTAD was created. It is a privilege to brief you on UNCTAD 16, which will take place here in the Palais, as I said before, in just 1 week. I will bring together, the conference will bring together countries in a general debate that will last all week. We have already around 100 countries that have confirmed their participation from capital, around 60 ministers and 40 vice ministers that will be with us. We have already 1,700 people registered to come to the conference, so we are very excited with the wide reception and enthusiasm that we have seen around the globe. We will have also 7 ministerial roundtables with ministers that will come from all continents. And we will address issues on trade, on finance for development, on technology, especially artificial intelligence and inclusive digital economy. Issues of debt and investment and regional trade, global supply chains, and also we will hold the ministerials of the G77 in China, of the least developed countries, and the small island developing states. Additionally, we will have, apart from the ministerials, where we will have 7 ministerials, as I said, 7 panels. We will hold also a fora and sessions on different issues. We will have 24 sessions that will analyze and debate issues such as boosting affordable financing from the multilateral system and the multilateral development banks and national development banks, bridging credit rating and market information gaps that are very important also for the high cost of capital that many developing countries face. And this is also very important on the debt debate, where we will follow also on FFD4, and we will talk about the Borrowers Club and the principles for better borrowing and lending. The theme we have chosen is Shaping the Future, Driving Economic Transformation for equitable, inclusive, and sustainable development. And for sure here, we also will have a youth forum, a gender forum, and a civil society forum, and we will have a business leaders dialogue. So the United Nations Secretary General will also join us, underscoring the importance of UNCTAD, that is the UN's largest trade conference in 4 years. UNCTAD 16 takes place also at a critical time for global trade and for multilateralism. We are witnessing a transformational shift in multilateral trade, and the decisions we make during UNCTAD 16 will impact the future of trade and global development policy and debate. Over the 4 days of the conference, we will be confronting some of the most critical challenges in the global economy and in geoeconomics of our time. So one of the main questions that come when we talk about these issues is how to rebuild predictability in the trade system. We know that unpredictability and uncertainty are really affecting not only trade, but investment and growth. So how do we rebuild predictability, and how trade can serve development amid growing fragmentation in the world? How can we ensure that finance and debt serve development, not hinder it? How do we incentivize investment so investment will go where it can make the greatest impact? And how do we ensure that the digital revolution, digital revolution and AI works for everyone? These four areas, trade, finance, investment, and technology, are not separate issues. There are four pillars of developing world, of the development and key for the developing world. They are interconnected, and together they form the single complex challenge that is achieving sustainable economic development. How to make the global economy work for everyone, especially for those who are the most vulnerable. Let me briefly walk you through each of these challenges very briefly, because these are the focus of the ministerial roundtables and the expert debates that will take place. Obviously, all these debates and ministerials will open for you to follow and attend. So let me go to trade first. I already said a lot, but trade has always been a powerful engine for economic progress, especially for developing countries, especially for the small and medium-sized countries. It has the potential to create jobs, to drive investment, and to generate public revenue to fund development. It can be critical for poverty reduction, for social inclusion, and economic diversification. But we know that trade alone cannot achieve all these goals. Trade by itself is not a development strategy. It's only part of a development strategy. There are still too many commodity-dependent countries in the world. 95 of the 143 developing economies are still commodity-dependent, and they need a more complex and diversified productive structure. We need to make sure that trade can support the productive transformation of these countries and enable them to move up the development ladder. And this is very important, especially today, because we know that many of the developing countries that are still commodity dependent are countries that have this huge wealth in the new critical minerals. And so how to make this wealth really work for development and for sustainable development for the future, and not to go back to the mistakes of the past, to be commodity dependent, is part of the discussions that we will have in UNCTAD 16. Trade policy shifts and the uncertainty surrounding them are creating new barriers that constrain firms' growth and undermine countries' capacity to design and implement effective economic and sustainable strategies. They divert investment, wipe out jobs, delay contracts, and drain the competitiveness of many of the developing countries. So as we often repeat, uncertainty can be more disruptive than tariffs. However, in the first half of 2025, and these are really good news, global trade continued to grow in the positive side, despite geopolitical tensions and economic volatility, and $500 billion of growth in trade have happened. So this is driven by electronics, trade electronics, driven by rising demand from AI systems and investment. So, but it's very important to say that in the second quarter of 2025, trade was largely supported by the performance of developing countries. Let me give you some numbers. According to our trade update, goods grew 5% in value. Services grew 6% in value. And South-South trade, excluding China, grew 9% in value. So that's why we say the resilience of trade and the more dynamism than expected in trade, so higher growth than expected, is coming a lot from South-South trade dynamics. This demonstrates that global trade is more resilient than expected, but we need still to restore predictability to the global trade system so for it to be able to continue to be the engine of growth for developing countries and also to restore investment in the developing world. Trade fragmentation fuels financial fragility because obviously if the countries have a strangulation in their external sector, they will see also a financial problem because they won't have the hard currency to be able to continue the growth of their economy. So restoring confidence and stability, rebuild trust in the trade system are the foundations that give small and medium-sized countries especially the certainty to plan, to invest, and to move forward in times of change. And that is why it's so important, the negotiation between the two major economies of the world, that are the US and China. The second challenge is finance, and let me refer here only to debt, because as you know and you have heard us, 3.4 billion people in the world live in countries that are spending more on servicing the debt than on health and education. 1 year before, it was 3.3 billion people. This 2024 was 3.4 billion people. And this is a lot of million people that live in countries that spend more in service and the debt than on education and health. So we talk about a development crisis because these countries cannot invest in infrastructure and in the services that the people need to build the capacities and a sustainable growth for the future. Many of these countries spend over 10% of their revenues just in servicing the debt. 10% is huge. So This is a heavy burden for many of the developing countries, and we need the global financial system to come in the rescue. We need a system that will be fairer, more predictable, and more accessible. And that's why the Financing for Development Conference last July calls for the development banks to scale up their support to the developing countries. And also in the Financial for Development Conference, a borrower's club was called to be created by the countries that are net borrowers so they can strengthen their capacities to negotiate, their capacities to manage their debt, and their capacity to plan accordingly to their financial circumstances. So more affordable, long-term capital is key to invest in health, in education, and infrastructure that are basic pillars for sustainable development. Thirdly, we must address investment. Foreign direct investment into developing countries is going down. And that is a source of worry for us, because investment in the new sectors, including the digital sectors, are where the future opportunities lie. But we cannot ignore the fact that the vast majority of global capital flows are going to places with little productive impact. It goes to the same sectors, to the traditional sectors, and to the same countries. So our goal is not our goal is to be able to establish the conditions under which investment can be directed to the real economy outcomes and to the countries that needs it most. We want investment to go to infrastructure, to sustainable infrastructure, to green energy, to health and education, to water and sanitation, to the agricultural sector. The goal is not just to attract investment, but to attract the right kind of investment. So investment in developing countries is not just about capital. Yes, we all know that. It's about creating capacities, and it's about bringing technology so to create a long-term value for all. In technology, as I have just said, the digital and AI economy is transforming completely the global landscape, societies, and economies. From artificial intelligence to data flows, technology has the power to drive inclusion and innovation, and we celebrate that. But we know that we need to include all the countries in their capacities and in their connectivity to be able to benefit from this revolution, technological revolution. Digital trade and data flows underpin over 60% of the growth, global GDP growth. So they are really very important. Seven companies control more than 80% of the cloud infrastructure investment and the generative AI investment. So the risk is that the digital revolution and AI will concentrate even more the opportunities. But it has the power and the promise to do exactly the opposite, to be a source of inclusion and not exclusion. That is why the Global Digital Compact that was approved in the Pact of the Future and the AI resolution in the General Assembly are so important. We will help governments design policies for data governance, for digital competition, and to build digital capacity to ensure that all countries can compete in the digital era. So all these challenges are, as I said, interconnected, so they cannot be addressed in isolation, and the conference at UNCTAD is a very important space for cooperation, for dialogue, and for building agreements and trust, and in that way build and strengthen multilateralism. The context may be difficult, but there are signs of dynamism and opportunity. UNCTAD 16 provides us with a unique opportunity to help rebuild trust, show that collaboration can produce real solutions for the world's most challenging problems. As I said at the 80th session of the UN General Assembly, the global economy is being reshaped under pressure, with the poorest countries, least developed countries, landlocked developing countries, and small island developing states bearing the heaviest costs. UNCTAD 16 can address this at a very critical moment so we can shape a future where trade, finance, investment, and technology serve all and do not leave developing countries behind. So I thank you, and I'm ready to take your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, SG, for this briefing. We will now open the floor for questions. Please raise your hand and state your media and your name before speaking, and we will start with the journalists in the room here with us in Geneva, and then give the floor to the 15 journalists who are following us online. So the floor is open for questions in the room. Please state your media. Thank you. We can go first.
Yes, thank you. Agnès Pedro from AFP. A question on the ministers and other high officials that you have announced. Could you give us some examples of some names that you already know that they will come here in Geneva? And concerning the Secretary General, will he be here in Geneva or will he deliver online? And in the end, what do you expect from this conference to happen? Thank you.
Yes, we can share with you the list that is already confirmed. I will ask my people to do that with you. The SG will be in person, but he won't be on Monday. He will be here on Wednesday. So he will deliver a special address on Wednesday. And what we expect from the conference, we expect a very strong outcome document that renews the place of UNCTAD in the debate, in the global economic debate, on the four areas that I have just mentioned, on trade, investment, finance, and technology. But, you know, looking at the new elements, the new challenges that we face in these interconnected challenges faced by the developing countries. We are very happy with the spirit of the negotiation that we have had up to now. I have always said that UNCTAD is an organization that looks at the challenges from the point of view of the developing countries and the global south, but the important thing is to have a constructive dialogue with the universal membership of UNCTAD. And UNCTAD is the most universal organization of the UN because we have even more members than the General Assembly. And so to take stock of that universality for a conversation that is able to look at the challenges, to have an open dialogue and a constructive way to look at the solutions, I think that is key today more than ever.
Thank you. I would just like to add that the complete agenda and program for the conference is available online, and all the sessions that are streamed are also indicated so they can be followed live. Thank you. We can take another question from a colleague in the center of the room.
Thank you, Secretary General Rivika. This is Mr. Liang from China Economic Daily. Thank you very much for your quite comprehensive and inspiring briefing about the upcoming UNCTAD 16 meeting. My question is related to one particular event which is taking place under the whole conference, which is the forum, which would take place under the umbrella. My question is related to in the forum, there is one sub-forum titled Global Commodity Forum 2025. So my question is, what have made UNCTAD, or is it the member states that made the decision that when we are talking about global commodities this year, we are singling out the critical materials, the critical minerals? And as a follow-up to this question, as we know, there are multiple UN agencies just here in Geneva also working on this thing. For example, the UNECE, who also have a sustainable energy forum 2 weeks back. Is there some coordination, or are we seeing the UNECE or some of their representative taking part in this upcoming event, the UNCTAD 16? Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for your question. First of all, the commodity section in UNCTAD has always been there. We have always been very strong in the commodity research, analysis, and evidence. So here, UNCTAD was part of the critical minerals committee that was put together by the Secretary General. But I think that the forum is more in general about commodity, the commodity part. And our emphasis is more about how to make the new commodity boom be an opportunity for the developing world. That is really our, you know, our perspective, because many of these countries can really use this new commodity boom to be able to diversify their economies, to be more on the sustainable development path. And we would like to have a conversation on what is needed for the countries to really take these opportunities. That is really the emphasis, that from the UNCTAD perspective is productive capacities, is productive diversification, and the opportunity that comes to countries with the new, let's put it that way, the new commodity boom. Actually, the critical minerals label is a new one. Yes. Maybe to specify that you need the same commodities for the energy transition and for the digital transition, yes? And again, most of these commodities are in the developing world. So I hope that we will learn from the past and we will have a very constructive agenda to help and sustain, support investment in the developing world that will create value added for these countries and productive diversification. That is really our lens. I know that there is a geopolitical discussion about this, but that's not the lens, the lens we are putting in it.
Thank you. On our right.
Thank you. My name is Christiana with the German Press Agency. I have two questions. The first one is, beyond the declaration that you have been working on and that is being finalized now, is there something concrete that these countries will be able to take home at the end of the 4 days? Because paper, in Germany, you say paper is easy to fill, but what comes after? So is there a concrete action plan? Is there something that countries can take home? And my second question, if you allow me, you are an official candidate for the position of Secretary General now. Could you share with us what your unique qualities are to fill that job? Thank you.
Okay, let me hear. Yes, there are two parts on the outcome document. One is the chapeau part, or the more declaration part, and there is the operational part. And in the operational part, we hope the countries, they are still negotiating, but there will be concrete things for us to follow for the next 4 years. So we expect things that are practical and that will make sense. Let me give you an example, because I think that is important also to see how UNCTAD has also changed during these 4 years, yes? And what are the things that we hope we can continue strengthening for the future. In a way, UNCTAD before was an organization that did analysis before and after, but not during. I don't know if that makes sense. This is the analogy that I use, yes? We did things after the fact, and we did the analysis, what happened and whatever, or before the facts in terms of projections and recommendations for policymaking. But when crises or impacts were happening, we were less agile to provide evidence and facts for policymaking in the moment and for options to open up. For example, we are now producing a trade update every month because the situation is so fluid that for people to be informed and to have the latest and to understand what is going on, you know, they need much more of us producing on time and in time and on time analysis. So, for example, we produced 2 very small analyses on AGOA, to give you an example, where we are the only organization that is being present in the discussions on the extension of AGOA in the US, in Congress and in the press. And we think that that is important because we know how important it is to many African countries for AGOA to be extended. And in the recommendations of the extension of AGOA, the research of UNCTAD is the research that is being brought in as evidence. So that has been like a new development in, you know, in what we do, we would like to be strengthened in terms of our capacities for the future. The other, for example, is LDCs. The LDCs want a specific mention of the support of UNCTAD to their graduation process. And that's a very specific and very concrete way of helping the LDCs to graduate with momentum, because for many of them is to lose some prerogative in the trade system because they graduate. And so how they prepare for it, what is the vulnerability profile and how we can continue to support them even further is one of the main issues that is being discussed in the outcome document. So I give you 2 examples in here for a... So I hope that the request that is held in your question will be comply with the outcome document and the negotiations of the country. It's not our negotiation, it's an intergovernmental process, but I am hopeful that it will be good. With respect to the announcement of in my country of their intention to present my candidacy when the process starts in the UN. And maybe here it's important to say 2 things. First, formally the process has not started. There has to be a letter from the President of the General Assembly together with the present President of the Security Council starting the process and telling us how the process will be carried out, what will be the agenda, and in a way the timing of the different parts of the process that will need to be that we need to comply with according to the resolution of the General Assembly. And so the expectation is that letter, that common letter, shared letter, will go out between November and December this year. And there we will know when the process will start. As I said to my colleagues in UNCTAD and to all the staff, the campaign has not started. And I intend to be concentrated in UNCTAD issues during this period. And when the campaign will start, and we will know when that will be, so I will ask for a temporal permit to dedicate myself to the campaign, and I will leave during that. I will ask for that permit during that time, during the time that of the campaign. Well, with respect to my unique qualities, as I said, I don't want to enter into this, or, you know, because I don't want to campaign right now. And I want this to be about UNCTAD, but we can talk about it one-to-one afterwards. I don't want to divert this conference, this press conference, from UNCTAD issues, but with I will answer to you after this.
Okay. Thank you, SG. We have questions online. I think a colleague from Geneva Solution had her hand up, and we can give the floor.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Secretary General, for the briefing. My question is regarding the context of UNAID and the revised 2026 budget. As you may know, the proposal on the table for UNCTAD is a 16% reduction. This means a new landscape for next year with less resources. We also have the UNAID that will presumably be looking at mandates that overlap, for example. And as you mentioned, this outcome document where countries will kind of give their vision for the next 4 years for UNCTAD. With all those kind of different elements, how do you see UNCTAD's role evolving? And given kind of the very complicated landscape that you paint in terms of the economic situation at a global scale, are you concerned about this very difficult financial situation for the organization kind of making it hard to respond to that? And then just another quick question, if you could tell us a little bit more about, you mentioned some examples about the outcome document, some of the concrete initiatives that you hope to see come out of it. But could you give us a little bit more about maybe some of the more challenging issues that that are being discussed and negotiated? Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. First, UNAID. Yes, we are reducing 20% of our staff, of our post, not our staff, our post, and 16% in financial resources. That is the relation. We are doing this without eliminating in a forceful way any zero incumbent posts. So we are doing 58 posts that are vacant and that we have accumulated during 2 years with a very careful decision in each post that I decided what will remain vacant and what will remain will be filled during these 2 years. We have taken decisions on each post. And so, and that's why we have asked for exceptions when we needed vacancies to protect the main, the core and main capacities of the organization. So 58 posts that are vacant and 19 posts that will be eliminated with the early retirement package that was provided by the UN. So voluntary early retirement. So with these two, we get to the 77 posts that will be eliminated in UNCTAD. So the people that is working now, they will continue working, and we, as I said, have been very careful in protecting the mandates and main capacities of the organization. So, how do I see UNCTAD going forward, and what how do we match the conference with this restriction in resources? So first of all, let me say that we have conferences every 4 years. So this conference has to look up, not only to 2026 and 2027, it has to look also for 2028 and 2029. And that brings us to the 2030 and to the end of the period of the 2030 agenda. So how do I see UNCTAD in this realm? I see UNCTAD stronger in trying to provide the keys, the data, the evidence, the research, the analysis for the post-2030 agenda, for the world that we will encounter precisely in 4 year time. And I have asked the intergovernmental process or the members of the intergovernmental process, the countries, to be flexible to understand that 2026 is next year, but the next conference is in 4 years. And so the situation can change. And we need the flexibility in the wording to be able to adapt very quickly to all the new circumstances that can arise, as they have this year, in the spectrum of trade, investment, finance, and technology. I see UNCTAD as a flexible, agile, and relevant organization. And I can tell you that we have worked very hard to conquer this space within the ecosystem of the UN for UNCTAD's economic stand in terms of development. We have been very good citizens of the processes in the UN. We have really made a huge contribution to FFD4, to the Pact of the Future, to the Digital Compact. So UNCTAD is a very valued organization within the UN system. And through the UN system, we have been able also to influence, as I gave examples before, the global debate. From the developing countries and global south perspective, you can ask anybody, and we are considered for them one of the main and most important organizations within the system. They really feel that UNCTAD is there to have a perspective, an analysis, and a robust and sound research from the point of view of the interest of the global south. But we have become also a place, as I said before, for dialogue, for consensus building, for agreements going forward. So I expect the outcome document to help us strengthen our capacities and our position on the issues that we can contribute to. Now, the UNAIDS process has allowed us also to have a conversation with the other organizations that are economic organizations in the UN system. So we have had very important and interesting conversations with the regional commissions and with DESA. And I think that there are more synergies than competition. There is more complementarity than duplication. And that is in the report that the ESG has put forward to the member states. And I hope that that will help also us to be more efficient as a system, and UNCTAD to be more capable of responding to the challenges despite the cost cuts. Undoubtedly, and I am very frank on this, we have to be more focused. You know, there are many things that maybe are not essential to the final result that we will have to rebalance. There are meetings that will have to be shorter. There are technical cooperation gatherings that will have to include more countries but be less frequent. You know, there are efficiency gains that we will have to do there. We are using more AI and more data science to do many of the things that we do. So those things of refocusing, being more efficient, are part of the agenda and the reform that we have to continue carrying on for the next years. But I am convinced that what we have done and the way we have done it, we will be even stronger going forward.
Thank you, SG. There is a question online from a colleague from the Swiss news agency. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, SG, Laurent Sierro, Swiss News Agency. Thanks for the press conference. I understood that you don't want to speak further of the campaign ahead for the position of UNSG, but I just want to clarify what you said before. So have I understood correctly that as soon as the campaign will start, you will ask to leave temporarily your position as head of UNCTAD, and that would mean that Pedro Manuel Moreno would become the interim SG as long as the campaign will last? Is it what you said? Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yes, we don't know when the campaign will start because we don't still know dates or calendar. The calendar is the word in English. You know what the calendar will be. So that's why I don't have a specific date. Yes, I will leave temporarily when we will be already into the campaign. And who is going to take care of UNCTAD? The normal thing will be the deputy, but this is not my decision. It's a decision of the Secretary General, and it's his prerogative to take that decision. So the normal thing will be that the Deputy Secretary General will assume the functions during the temporary leave.
I think there are two further questions from the room. We can take first on the right and then. Please state your media.
Hello, Ms. SG. I'm Sun with Guangming Daily. I have two questions. You just told us you and UNCTAD have to be more focused on some questions. So what issue do you like to address through the conference or meeting? Or through dialogue, on which topics do you hope to foster cooperation and reduce misunderstandings? In your opinion, what is the most critical challenges nowadays that you want the ministers to discuss during the meeting? The second question is that you mentioned the growth of the global economy and trade, that this implies a reduction in uncertainty, or that the global economy is back on track. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that part of the DNA of UNCTAD is to advocate for international cooperation. And we really believe that it's very important for predictability to have a rules-based world. And we think that for trade that is important and will require cooperation of all members of WTO in the case of WTO, but also of UNCTAD. We have really advocated for the tariff discussion not to end up in a trade war. The trade war will be the worst of the outcomes. And we are happy, or we welcome, let's say, that's a better word. Happy is a... But we welcome that instead of a trade war, there are negotiations, especially between China and the U.S., because these are the main economies of the world. Whatever they will decide and negotiate will affect all of us. And so it's very important that this will be carried out in a whatever the final result will be, that it will be carried out in a negotiated way. That's much better for all the world. So we have said that we are still not in a trade war because negotiations are taking place. And we welcome that that the negotiations will continue. That will make the world more stable and more predictable if we will carry out ourselves in that way. And so with the ministers, we have to discuss the challenges that the new geoeconomy of the world is presenting. We are in a multipolar world, especially in the economic field. And multipolarity brings the promise of more inclusion, more decentralization, more countries coming up the ladder. And so the question really is how we take opportunity, take stock of this opportunity for the world to go on the side of development and cooperation and not of fragmentation. Fragmentation will undoubtedly really affect us negatively. It will affect global growth, it will affect investment, and will affect trade itself. Because, you know, it's very difficult for the small countries and the vulnerable countries to manage a spaghetti ball. You know, of different rules and different norms, and, you know, they don't have the capacity to navigate the complexity that can come from a fragmented world. And, you know, the WTO and the IMF and the World Bank, they have made projections of how much of global growth we will lose if we go towards fragmentation and not towards cooperation. We ourselves have said that a multipolar world with multilateralism will take us to a better place. A multipolar world with fragmentation will take us in the other direction. And that, I think that that is a fundamental thing that we have to discuss at the ministerial level. What are the tools, what are the proposals that, and the understanding of the world that we have, to try to be a force for good and a force towards multilateral, a more effective multilateralism. Because let me say also that many countries have brought in the past the reforms that are needed in WTO. And there is a reform agenda in WTO. So we are not saying the status quo is fit for purpose. I have this phrase that I have repeated a lot. Being a multilateralist today means to be a reformist. We need to reform the system to really bring it to the 21st century. But we need reform, not destruction. We need strong institutions, fit for purpose. But no institutionality, no rules, no framework is chaos and won't bring the world to a more peaceful and stable situation. That is our, and I think that that's the point of the conference in what it relates to trade, to finance, to technology, and to investment. With respect to the global economy, I am not so pessimistic because the global economy has proven to be more resilient than many of the catastrophic projections that we had before. Now, this is not to say that we won't suffer in global growth. I think that the dynamic growth that we saw before 2018 has not come back. Since, 2008 has not come back. After the financial crisis, we never saw growth recover at the same rate that we had before. And we have to acknowledge that a more dynamic growth will be very welcome for the developing world. But it is also true, and that's maybe my point, it is also true that we are still in the positive side on trade and growth. We don't have negative growth or negative trade. And it is also true that we are growing. The global growth is not as dynamic, but the global economy is bigger. So we are starting from a much bigger platform for growth. And so even if growth is less, the adding value of that percentage of growth is much larger than it was before. And sometimes we forget that. You know, it's not the same, and let me give the example of China, yes? It's not the same for China at the beginning of the process to grow at that 8-10% than today to grow at 5%, but from a much bigger economy. So the 5% in terms of the adding, how much value it adds to the economy, is much larger. And we forget that when we talk about percentages, yes? That we are in an economy that is much larger than before. And so part of the dynamic and the technology dynamic that we are seeing comes from that. So my worry is not about the aggregate. My worry is about the asymmetry that affects vulnerable countries much more than the countries that have the resilience, the size, and the capacities to take advantage of the opportunities that this new economy have. Thank you.
We had a question from the floor in the room. Please go ahead.
Boris Engelson, a local freelancer. It might well be that you already addressed my query in the last part of your talk, but I still have to absorb it, so I will still go on. I understand that UNCTAD is very keen on analyzing and assessing before, after, and during. What food for thought will there be in the upcoming conference for those who still wonder what went wrong in the past half a century or one century in the development of Russia, Latin America, Africa, MENA, and other parts of the world? And my second question, you refer to inequality. Some people say that there are time bombs in the world economy and not necessarily where we expect them. For instance, that Indonesia might explode one of these days. It's not the only one. What does UNCTAD do to identify the time bombs and possibly defuse them?
Thank you. Very good questions. Let me say, what went wrong? The asymmetries grew. Inequalities within the countries grew. And that's part of what I said before. Trade is not a development strategy. It's only an element of a development strategy. If you don't have a development strategy, when you bring liberalization in your economy, where you will have winners and losers, if you don't have a development strategy for the transformation of the sectors that will no longer be competitive, you are set yourself for more inequality and probably lower growth than a comprehensive and well-developed strategy will bring. And that's part of the problem with the consensus around the 80s of last century, that it was reductionist. You know, you liberalize, you privatize, you know, all the, you let the markets adjust, and automatically you will have a better outcome. And the problem is, and that's the voice of UNCTAD, it has been the voice of UNCTAD since the 60s, yes? We have said the invisible hand is not able to provide a coherent development strategy.
Mm-hmm. Since decolonization, most countries first went through a 30-year phase of protectionism. And the failure of Soviet Union is not clearly the failure of liberal policies, etc. So, and the promises of so many utopian regimes. So I'm not sure that all the ills come from liberalism.
I come from a small country. We cannot survive without trade and investment. And that's what we did, yes? I am not saying close your economy. Precisely, I said developing countries need trade and investment. But you have to know what is the right way to do it. Because if you do it thinking that everything will adjust automatically, then there are parts of your population that will lose, and that will come to haunt you. And that is happening. You know, when you have to take care of a more integral way of looking at the economy. And you have to look at society, you have to see what society is going through to be able to adjust, you know, and that's the place and the right way to assume the challenges. You have to follow up. You have to understand how to help better on the adjustments. Let me just finish very quickly saying something that I think that is important to bring back to the development discourse. When changes are, when changes accelerate, not everything changes at the same pace. And new imbalances come up in society. And there are sectors that find more difficult to adjust to very rapid change. And you have to manage those imbalances, these new disequilibriums that came up. It's part of the normal way in which change affects, in a differentiated way, different countries and different parts of society. So it has to be a more a implicit variable for in your strategy to take care of the parts of the economy and the population that cannot change alone at the same pace. It happens with technology, it happens with growth, it happens. This was part of the development literature before and disappeared, like instant adjustment was possible. Instant adjustment is not possible for society as a whole and for the countries as a whole. So we have to bring back the capacity to support the capacity of all sectors to adjust to rapid change. And especially now that we are in a period of such accelerated change that I think that we have never seen before. So with that, I will stop. Thank you.
Thank you, SG. We now have time for one final question online, John Zaragostas, and then we will have to close. Thank you very much. John, please go ahead.
Yes. Good afternoon, Secretary General. I was wondering if you have given the UNCTAD special unit on analysing the economy of the OPT, if you have new estimates on the amounts that it will cost to reconstruct both the West Bank and Gaza, and the amount of foreign direct investment, and what will be the priority areas, and if there will be a special session during the 16th session on this issue. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Very good question. In November, we will present our new report, and we will have all the estimates there. Not estimates of reconstruction, because this is something that we don't do. It's UNDP. UNDP and the World Bank both do numbers for reconstruction. What we have done in our first report on Gaza is to estimate how much will it take for the economy, not for the reconstructions of the building, but for the economy to be back in the pre-war scenario. And that's the numbers that we gave, and we will again give numbers about how do we see the economy of the West Bank and Gaza. In November, we will have our report to our board, and we are in that process, finalizing, and so we can give you much more details at that moment. There is no special session on this in the conference, but there is a special session on this on the board. That is where we are going to present our report. The numbers continue to be very challenging.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. With that, we will close the press conference. I would just like to thank journalists who have joined us online and in the room, remind you that all information on UNCTAD 16 is available online. The program is being updated daily, and register for the conference. Almost all sessions will be open for you to follow, and many, many interesting people to interview, of course. So please register for the conference, follow us online, and the website will be updated for all of you almost daily. Thank you very much, Secretary General.
Thank you all.